Good evening. Welcome to the Natural Alternative Series here at WUSB Stony Brook. 90.1 and 107.3 around campus and streaming live on the web at WUSB.FM. Thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in tonight to our long-running show. I would like to introduce myself. My name is Courtney Bozick. I do the Environmental Radio Hour here at the station. But tonight, I'm introducing another host who is John Scardina. So, John, we're so very happy that you're one of our rotating hosts. And before we get started tonight, I'd just like to mention our other show hosts, Bob DiBenedetto of The Healthy Planet, Jennifer Green of Love and Liberation, and Dr. Z, and Ellen Kyman, our founder. So, thank you to all of the hosts and our loyal audience of these many, many years. It's over 28 years of the show. So, tonight, as I mentioned, our host is John Scardina. John was my teacher at Oakwood Friends School. He influenced me to become an environmental scientist. And just a little about his background, he's such an interesting person. He has degrees from Princeton and Harvard. He has devoted 5 decades to pupil education, first as a natural science teacher in chemistry, biology, and ecology, and for the last 33 years as a school psychologist. So, John, thank you for being our host tonight.
Oh, thank you, Courtney. So good to be back on Natural Alternatives. And as everyone will find out, the word alternatives is going to figure very carefully and importantly into our conversation together. So I'm delighted to be back. And this is actually our second show on the topic of the Alternatives to Violence Project, or AVP. You'll hear us say those letters. And we had a wonderful show back in December with our New York State AVP coordinator, Shirley Way. And I'm delighted to have two other AVP, we call ourselves facilitators, with me tonight. I have Jill McClellan and Valentine Doyle. So before we get in this into this show, I just want to take a moment. We usually ring a meditation bell here, but we don't have one, so I want you to use your active imagination at the moment and imagining a very calm and peaceful sound to create some sacred space. So I know I violated every dead air rule about radio shows, but oh well, I'm sure your imagination has helped you out here. Okay. So, natural alternatives. And sometimes people will believe that the natural way for people to react to conflict and difficulty is with violence. And many of us have had the experience of violence seemingly taking over ourselves in difficult situations. And it takes active work, it seems to me, to understand that there are many, many other responses in a difficult situation that operate out of love rather than out of fear, strive for connection rather than dominance, and work for connection with as opposed to power over. And that's what AVP is all about. And I will say that, my journey to AVP comes from growing up in a family full of violence, from my own participation in violence, my seemingly miraculous discovery of Quakers when I wandered into Oakwood Friends School, and Courtney was there at my very, very first Quaker meeting for worship at Oakwood in 1978, my goodness, and realizing that I would been looking for these people all my life. I just didn't have the opportunity to find them as of yet. So that's how this came about. And I'm going to give a brief history. We did this in our last show, and I'll keep this brief because I really want to get to our guest today and talk about, you know, how this works and what they've experienced in their lives. In 1971, there was a very terrible event in our collective history, the Attica Uprising, September 9th to 13th. You know, 39 people died. We now understand that all of those deaths were due to the bullets from the National Guard soldiers that came in. And what happened is, within the incarcerated community in New York State, folks realized that if rehabilitation was going to happen, and if human rights were going to happen, because Attica was all about human rights, about being able to live as a full human being, even while incarcerated, it was going to have to be an inside job. I know that sounds, I'm being clever here, but I really mean it, an inside job, that they were going to have to look inside themselves and find it. So a group of incarcerated men at Green Haven Prison got together and invited a group of Quakers in 1975. And they said, let's design a program to help people come up with alternative ways of dealing with violence in their lives. And thus the Alternative to Violence Project was born. Alternative violence projects are prevalent in many, many prisons. And you're going to hear about each of our prison experiences on this show. Also in many schools and community groups. The three of us on the show as Courtney's guest, as our guest tonight, have been around the world experiencing this program. We're in the number sometimes is 50, sometimes 60. I tried to do a count, but I'm not sure, but many countries around the world. And so we're gonna be talking about something which, by the way, listeners, is also available on Long Island, where this station is located at University of Stony Brook, and also in any community around the USA. We'll give you that contact information as we go along. So what is an Alternatives to Violence Project workshop? I'm gonna talk about the first level called the basic workshop, okay? It talks about first affirmation. Oh, we all have names. We give ourselves names that are positive and reflect a positive trait within ourselves. So my affirmation name is Jazzy John. Now, Courtney, you have an affirmation name too. You've just chosen one. What would you say yours is?
Well, the one that was suggested by my sister is Caring Courtney.
And we love it. And you're going to meet in a little bit. You're going to meet Jumping Jill and Funny Valentine. Very often these names begin with the same letter as the first letter of our names, but we've had varieties of permutations on that theme as we've gone along. This workshop begins with affirmation because we need to recognize the goodness in ourselves to begin with. It moves into community building, creating a group like we created some sacred space today, even without the bell, in our active imaginations, creating a community. And we do this very carefully. We very carefully move from low risk, fun openings into more in-depth and searching conversations. We get communication skills. We develop a toolbox. Everybody needs a toolbox. And we'll talk about how to keep those tools sharp, you know, going forward. There's a quote attributed to Abraham Lincoln, perhaps, and said, what would you do if you had 6 hours to cut down a tree? And he said, I spend the first 4 hours sharpening my axe, and then it'll only take me an hour to cut down the tree, as opposed to hacking away at it for the entire time with a dull instrument there. Okay, so we work on communication skills. And then we create scenarios based upon our true life experiences to practice conflict resolution. We use role plays for this. And it's a very powerful and insightful event that takes place in a workshop. The AVP philosophy talks about these pieces of what's called transforming power, a power which gives us the ability to act in the universe for the greater good and to access the resources within and without. We use a mandala based upon the Indian sacred symbol shape. In the center of that mandala is transforming power. The first concentric layer coming out from that is respect for self and caring for others. And they're balanced, one to the other. We take care of ourselves, we take care of others using those resources. And around the outer rim, expect the best, think before reacting, and ask for a nonviolent solution. Finally, I'll say a few things about the overall philosophy of AVP. It's spiritual. Transforming power is a spiritual concept, not a religious concept. It's not tied to any one particular faith practice. It's healing, but it's not therapy. The group really works toward a healing community as it goes forward. We look for the good in each person. We understand that the more we put in, the more we take out. We understand that we all come as teachers and we all come as learners. It becomes very, very synergistic in terms of how the energy flows amongst everyone. And we all come as volunteers. No one takes an AVP workshop because they have to. We all take an AVP workshop because we want to. Another really important part of an AVP workshop is something called the light and lively. Really, the designers and the ongoing evolution of this workshop is really brilliant for me in that we have very deep and wonderful exercises that really help us to look inside. And then we'll make a game, we'll play a game or an activity that'll have us all rolling on the floor laughing. And that exchange of energy back and forth allows us to then relax, release any tension that was built up, take a moment and move on to the next phase of what we're going to be doing together. Okay, so before I go on and introduce my two guests today, I want to remind us we're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook, 90.1 and 107.3 FM around the campus, streaming live on the web at wusb.fm. So I've asked two of my facilitator friends to join us today because I just had my very, very first prison workshop experience this past weekend. And it blew my mind as they're nodding at me now. You can't see this, my friends, but they're nodding at me because they've been doing it, as you're going to hear, they've been doing this for a long time. And I'm still processing what happened over the course of that weekend. So I chose them because they've been doing this work inside for a long time. And so the first I'm going to introduce, alphabetically, I guess J comes before V. Anyway, I'll introduce Jill McClellan, whose adjective name is Jumpin' Jill. You'll get a sense of that jumpin' energy in just a moment. So Jill was born in LA, always interested in social justice issues. Started going to Quaker meetings in high school because that's where the draft counseling and the anti-war folks were. And in true, what I now know, Jill fashion, got arrested at age 19 for blockading a Navy ship to go, trying to go to Vietnam. And she worked for the Forest Service and especially as a spe and also as a special ed teacher in California and Idaho. Courtney, our friend Bob Wright, you know, was a fire jumper in Idaho as well.
Really?
I didn't know if you knew that. So
no.
Jill and Bob might have crossed paths somewhere along the way. And then she came to New York. She had been teaching students with autism and learning differences. 39 years. That's really wonderful dedication. So here we go. Started doing AVP in prison, 1995. Continued since then, mostly in men's maximum security prisons. As you're going to hear, both Jill and Valentine were in maximum security prisons, and I was in Sing Sing, which is another maximum security prison. Jill has facilitated AVP workshops with youth in schools and in community settings. She's been spending more time with people who have come home from incarceration and helping them readjust to life in the community. Courtney, if we do an AVP take three show, which I'm hoping for, we're going to get formerly incarcerated people on this show to talk about that reentry and how AVP might help them for that.
I think we should definitely put that on the calendar, and I am sure our audience would be very, very interested and very supportive of that, as I know would our other hosts.
Yes, good, good, good. Yes, 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 good. And finally, Jill lives on a small organic farm in the Finger Lakes with a husband, goats, chickens, and a dog. Okay, so Jumpin' Jill, you want to say a few words of hello to everybody?
I would love to. This is quite an honor being here. And I love to talk about prison, which is one of my favorite places to be, which sounds very, very odd. But the realness of our interactions when we're inside prison is just amazing. And sometimes I have to pinch myself and think, am I really here? Am I really hearing these things? And almost everything I've learned about diplomacy, I learned from my friends who reside in prison, because diplomacy for them is necessary for them to make it through.
Excellent. Thank you so much. We'll get back to this conversation in a moment. I want to introduce Valentine Doyle, and her affirmation name is Funny Valentine. Valentine lives in Hartford, Connecticut. And she moved there in 1990 from San Francisco. So we have the left coast here. Look at that. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Valentine retired from working for a foundation. She joined her mom attending Quaker meeting, and then she met AVP. Valentine's been in prison for almost 30 years, facilitating in prison, mind you, mostly in men's prisons. She's now on the volunteer list at three Connecticut facilities, but she's facilitated at five overall. She's also facilitated in New York State. She's registered at Sing Sing, Attica, and Bedford Hills, and once each in California, Massachusetts, and Nepal. She's on several committees with the National Organization of AVP USA and AVP International. In fact, all of us shared being in Nepal together in 2017. And Valentine writes, I've been very interested in how AVP happens in over 30 US states, over 50 countries. I've enjoyed three international gatherings in Guatemala, Ireland, and Nepal. She's also been arrested twice. You find that Quakers get arrested a lot, and even though supportive non-Quakers too. And once in San Francisco and once in Hartford for demonstrating. And importantly, Funny Valentine lives in Hartford with one very nice cat. So hello, Funny Valentine.
Hello there, John. Hello, Jazzy John. Good to hear from you.
That's great. Good, good, good. And you know, I'll start with you, Funny Valentine, and just ask you, we have a sense of, you know, you have a sense you met AVP. Tell me about the beginning of getting involved with AVP. How the path developed for you?
Well, that happened at the Quaker meeting. They had a community workshop, which is one that is not in a prison, and they had it at this meeting. And my mother had heard something about AVP on television. The only thing she remembered was that people made up nice names for themselves. So I went to it. And then I got started in various Connecticut prisons.
What was the decision to work inside? Tell me about how you made that decision.
I had no choice. There weren't any outside.
So given that my first experience is so fresh in my mind, and I'll talk about that a little bit as the conversation proceeds with Jumpin' Jill as well. Do you have any recollections of your first time going inside?
Boy, that's 25 years ago. No, I don't really. They've sort of all blended. But one thing I do know, which is my recollection of almost every workshop in prison, which is it's fairly commonly known that in prison you have to keep up a mask of self-protection. You can't show any emotion. You really can't show any weakness. On the Friday evening of any workshop, by the end of the Friday evening, that mask is gone. It falls away. And we create an atmosphere of safety first and trust. And people realize that it is safe to say the things in the workshop that they wouldn't. I've heard again and again, I could never have said that on the block. I bet both of you have as well. Occasionally, somebody breaks down and sobs. And when that happens, everyone else in the room is warm and supportive and encouraging.
That's so helpful for people to hear that. My goodness.
And I think the answer is that that's what most people in prison are actually like, but the culture won't let them be that way most of the time.
I know for me, I felt that culture thing very much. When I just walked in, I felt my guard go up just walking in. And I had to be, it was a long process getting certified at Sing Sing. And on Friday, when I went in, I had to get photographed and fingerprinted. So I wasn't able to begin the workshop with everybody else. And the volunteer coordinator took me around and we went through all that. She actually was quite helpful in giving me a feel for the facility, which is quite large. For those of you, if you saw Shawshank Redemption, that was to have taken place at Sing Sing. And if you're a fan of old movies, when they said, we're gonna send you up the river, well, up the river is Sing Sing, right on the banks of the beautiful Hudson River. This is massive facility right there, my goodness. And so I had a peculiar experience in going into a workshop that was in process. And then the second thing that was curious about my experience is that Sing Sing now has post-pandemic has an out count at 10:30 every morning. So that we get to work with the men from 8:30 to 10:30. They have to go back to their cells. They have lunch in the commissary. We have to leave, facilitators have to leave the grounds. We may not stay inside and we don't come back in. We come back in at 12:30 after lunch and they come back at 1:00. And then we have to leave again at 3:30. So it was a very disjointed experience for my first time to be doing AVP inside. And yet the men were able to, at the end, were able to talk about just what Funny Valentine has said. the ability to say things that they would never say on the block, to show their feelings, and to go forward. And they kept asking, Jazzy John, when can I take the next workshop? When are we having the next workshop? And I didn't mention, after you take the basic, you may take something, we call it both level two or advanced, which is another in-depth look, usually focused on one topic, oftentimes fear or power or boundaries or whatever that might be. And then, and here's the beauty of AVP, after you've taken the basic and the advanced, you take a workshop called Training for Facilitators, T4F, and you can become a facilitator yourself. Once you've taken that, you apprentice a few times with the workshop, and then the group of facilitators keeps expanding. So I'm going to go back a bit. Jump in, Jill. What do you remember about the early days when you went inside?
I'm so glad you asked. I remember the sound of the clanging gates. Really, really loud. And Auburn, which is where I do many of my workshops, when my son was little, he thought it looked like a castle. It is very medieval. And actually, the men in Auburn were sent to Sing Sing to build the Sing Sing prison. So Sing Sing was built by incarcerated people from Auburn. The other thing that I remember is that after developing personal relationships with the men in the workshop, sometimes I would see them being patted down and frisked, not very nicely, as we left. And I was like, that's not the way you want your friends treated. So those are things I definitely remember. And like I said before, the way, and mostly I work with men, although I have been in a few women's facilities, the way they handle themselves when they're being spoken to rudely or whatever was a real lesson to me. To not take it personally, just say something, non-committal, keep it moving. We fortunately do not have to worry about the out counts. We go in, we actually do our workshops during the week, and we're able to stay there from 8 to 3. But there's always issues that arise at the front gate or with the correction officers, or you can't have this or you can't do this. And when I first went in, one of the first things I did is I went into Groveland, which is a medium security, and I had a New York State map with me because I got lost. Well, that is huge contraband. And one of the men saw that I had a map, and he goes, oh, put that away. He said, we could get shut down because you have this map. And, you know, it's not something that the rest of us even think about. But other people have gotten suspended for having, you know, a piece of mail or a book that has addresses in it or things that you just never think of. But I couldn't wait to go back.
That's great. Thank you, Jumping Jill. And yes, the clang of the gates was really something quite remarkable. And the being patted down, I decided at the beginning I was going to, of course, be polite and, you know, affirming with all of the COs, correction officers that we met along the way. And also was very aware of the culture that developed among the COs and the way that they spoke with one another and with the way they interacted. and very different from the culture that arose among the men. And the other piece is that many of the men kept saying toward the end of the workshop, you know, I'm gonna see you now. I'm going to talk with you now. I'm going to acknowledge you now. And said, I never talked to you before. You know, this idea that when you're on the block or in the commissary or whatever, it's very, very clear that you create, you know, that you create those boundaries. So that funny Valentine. Is there a piece of the workshop for you, or was there an experience with the workshop? I know you've said by the end of the first night, you know, you see the change happening, but could you talk about some of those transforming moments that happen in a workshop when you're with the men?
Well, I'd like to tell a story about a workshop where I was not present, but friends of mine were, and this is the most powerful AVP story I know. At the end of every workshop at McDougall, we go around a circle and everybody says something I would like to say to the group before I leave, because it's the very end of the workshop. And so this time there had been one participant who had really said almost nothing during the weekend. He hadn't been disruptive at all. You know, he certainly was going to get his certificate. We give one of those to everybody. But the team had kind of thought, well, he's, you know, he's being polite, but he's not getting anything out of it. And in the final circle, he happened to be near the end of the circle. He said, I suppose you all think that I haven't taken much in this workshop because I haven't said much. But I want you to know that I have taken in a lot. And I want to tell you a story about myself. When I got locked up, my brother and I, we both knew who was responsible for our being here. And we agreed that if we ever saw that guy, we would take care of him. He said, well, he's in this room now, which no one else had realized. And he walked three or four spaces down the line and stood in front of one of the other participants and said, brother, would you stand up? I want to apologize to you for wanting to kill you. And I see now that we're all in this together. And the two of them held each other. I'm feeling myself with tears even now thinking about it. But the workshop had been such a powerful lesson to him that he had let go of his need for vengeance.
Oh my goodness, what a story. And I mean, talk about even the phrase transforming power, the ability to change and do it from a position of strength, to change and to find that strength within. Oh, funny Valentine, that's a remarkable story. Where is McDougall?
It's in Connecticut. It's near the Hudson, the Connecticut River, and just south of the Massachusetts line.
Okay. And you also mentioned certificates. Suffield. Good. And you also mentioned certificates. And I was very moved by, I'm always very moved, any workshop I've done. This was my first workshop inside, but I've done many, many workshops in many places, how meaningful that certificate is.
Yes.
You know, and people get their certificate and it's very, very, very powerful for them. Okay. Jump and Jill, do you have a story for us, transforming power?
Yes, certainly. But along with Valentine's story, and then I wanted to tell another story, but I was in a workshop. I think I was one of the only, as they call us, civilians, one of the only people from the community. And we were kind of, I think we were talking in small groups, resolving conflicts or whatever. And One guy was sharing with the group that, you know, I don't belong here. You know, I have a lawyer. He's going to get me out, you know, blah, 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 blah. And this other man sitting next to me looked at him and said, "You got a body," which means he murdered someone. And he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Don't you think you belong here? Don't you think you're responsible?" And that just like blew me away, because as a privileged white person, I certainly, you know, I couldn't say something like that. But from this other man who was like, "Hey, take some responsibility here." And the guy kind of like, you know, you could see that he hadn't been thinking of it that way at all. Just like, you know, "I got to get out of here" thing, not like what harm he caused. But I wanted to say that the transforming power moments in my life, you know, I'm a middle class white woman. The violence in my life is mostly gossip and control and backstabbing and rumors, and not knives and guns and, you know what I mean, things like that. But I certainly have had times where I was really stuck. Like, what do I do about a situation? And I, like I said, I was a special ed teacher and I taught kids with autism. And I was needing to prepare my students to go to another school. No, I was at the other school. I was needing to prepare the next group of students to come to my school. And people with autism take a long time to adjust. And so I kept asking the teacher if she would bring the kids over for this and bring them over for that. And the answer was always no. And so one of the things that we work on is being creative rather than violent. And violent in that term wouldn't be physical, but like I could have reported her to the principal or complained or something. But I decided to have a breakfast party and invite all the people, the speech therapists, physical therapists, teachers, teacher assistants, everybody from both classes, and get together with a big calendar. I got a bunch of food and it's like, okay, let's plan the transition. And it worked perfectly because, you know, everybody's there. All your peers are there. You can't look bad and refuse to cooperate. And everybody wants to look good. So, you know, when we talk about alternatives to violence, it doesn't mean that you live on a street where people have, you know, assault rifles. If, you know, a lot of the violence that we see in our lives is interpersonal and control and greed and jealousy and all those things. So AVP works for everybody. Not just people in prison.
Oh, yes.
That's so helpful. That's so helpful. Thank you. Thank you, Jumping Jill. And that's so very important for us to realize, because sometimes maybe some of our listeners, they might go, "Alternatives to Violence Project, that's all well and good, but I'm not a violent person." And one of our early exercises in the program is a brainstorm of what is violence, expanded into what are the roots of violence, and then segueing into what is non-violence. And people begin to realize, oh my goodness, there are many experiences of violence in my life. I want to talk about one of the main tools in the toolbox that we give everybody, which is iMessages. Okay, iMessages being a way of moving into an area of conflict that might be difficult to solve. And I'd love to hear anyone have a good iMessage story that they'd like to bring up, or maybe even present it a little bit for our listeners. Funny Valentine or Jumpin' Jill?
Well, I'll tell a story about iMessages first, then I'll give you one. Is we were talking about it in the prison, and it's, you know, it's you take responsibility for the way you feel, and you're asking someone to change behavior kind of as a favor to you. But anyway, we were practicing in prison, and we were talking about it. And the next morning, one of the guys came in and he goes, "That shit works." And he said he was on the phone with his wife and he was able to use iMessage to tell her something. And she heard it and they didn't get into an argument.
I love it.
I mean, you can't get a better endorsement than that.
I love it. You know, and just very briefly for our listeners, you know, when I blank, when I hear, see, whatever, something, I feel, and we talk about feelings now, happy, sad, angry, you know, worried. Because I'm uncomfortable in those kinds of situations. Again, I would like, oh my goodness, I would like, as opposed to, of course, when you are to, because, you know, and it's a shift. And some of our listeners may want, if you want to look up Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg, there's many books about this kind of work as well. But we use a very straightforward methodology in our workshops, and then we practice it.
And I, sorry to butt in, John, but I'll give you my message. And this, the guys in prison were very aware that our son was a modern day hobo and was hopping trains and doing risky behavior. And so when I did get hold of him, my iMessage to him was, when we don't hear from you, we're all worried because we imagine, you know, you're lying dead in a ditch or something. So what we'd like to see happen is somehow once a week, get us a message.
Good.
And it worked. Good. And the funny thing was, I was driving to Auburn and I saw some hitchhikers and I slowed down because one guy was tall and had a tie-dye shirt and a dog with him. And our son looks like that. So I kind of pulled over and I said, "I'm going to the prison, but I've got a little bit of time. I can take you somewhere." And I said, "I thought you were maybe my son, Brett." And they go, "Brett? We know him." And they got him a message to get in contact with us. And he did that very night.
Wonderful. Oh my goodness. Jumpin' Jill.
So the main thing is to the feelings and the request, it's all on you, me, you know, not expecting someone else to do it, but asking them. And it's usually based on the relationship. Mm-hmm. And so I usually tell the guys in prison, I wouldn't start with a corrections officer. I would start with a coworker, a family member, you know, someone you have a relationship with. So Valentine probably has a story too.
You're muted, Valentine. There we go.
I'm feeling kind of stuck. Yeah, I turned the mute on because my phone was ringing. I'm going to have to pass on this one. I'm feeling stuck. So if I could, something later comes to me, I'll let you know.
Very good. Thank you, Funny Valentine. I'm going to move on to the other piece I mentioned a bit before, role playing. So one of the role plays this past weekend, and I'm going to give a shout out to our friend Margaret L, who trained me, who's sort of my mentor, because she was very specific in training me about role plays and all the things you do to make them work. Role plays take a group of usually four or five participants, choose a scenario that could go, a difficult scenario with a conflict that could go either way. It could go toward violence, it could go toward nonviolence and resolution. And they take on names of characters different than their own. If any of you know about psychodrama, it's got a lot of elements of psychodrama in it. They take on names different than their own. There's a moderator that explains the scenario. And what we did this past weekend is we ran the scenario two ways. One way where it goes toward violence, and then one way where it goes toward resolution. And I'll just choose, we had four excellent role plays on Sunday, but I'll just choose one, which was about your first day home. And I'm going to make an aside, which is that New York State is not alone, but New York State does a despicable job of helping people reintegrate back into our culture. You know, $20 in a Metro card and, you know, whatever, no out support, that sort of thing. And some of us, I mean, there is some work going on in New York State for something called Landing Strip, which is a way for people that come back out to get together and talk about their experiences and support with housing, jobs, food, just a meal, just fellowship, that sort of thing. Anyway, in the role play, somebody that had been formerly incarcerated is driving home, a brand new person, first day. And the formerly incarcerated person is doing well. He's got a job. He's got a car. He's back with his family, right? And you guys out. And he said, oh, man, I'm out. I'm going to, you know, this is great. And then they drive by all their old buds in the neighborhood. And the guys in the hood just go, yo, you're back. Come on, you know, come back and get back. Come on over here. You know, we want to see you or whatever. And that dilemma. And they played it out both ways. One where the guy gets out of the car and goes over and hangs with his old buddies, you know. And one where the guy just waves and the car keeps going. And the guy next to me, we were not in the role play. And the guy next to me, to use the other language again, we're on the radio, right? Said, that shit is real. You know, that really happens. I was like, you could knock me over, you know, because it's like 15 minutes, but it goes so deep into realizing you have a choice, you have a toolbox, you know, we can find a way to make our lives move in a better direction. So, you know, I think when I think of the workshop, which has many, many aspects to it, and remember we have those light and livelies in between, for the roughly 16 to 18 hours of face-to-face time that we spend together, an enormous amount of sharing and depth happens. Anything coming up, Funny Valentine, to share about perhaps another one of your experiences or a role play experience?
Well, I'm thinking of a role play I saw some years ago, and I don't remember how it worked, but it was similar to the one you were talking about. Somebody comes back to the old neighborhood, and the leader of the gang wants to talk to him, but he hasn't, and he's trying to get him to come back in. And then another buddy of his from the gang comes up, and the guy coming out has not been told that his friend is badly hurt, and he's now crippled, and he's walking with he can barely walk. And the confrontation between the guy coming out, realizing that his friend, partly that his friend had been injured, and also that his supposed chief had not told him about this. And that was a scary thing. And the other one I remember was one called The Voices in My Head. And this was done in a training for trainers. So the people in the role play were practicing to become trainers. And we had, they had four people. One of them was interviewing for a job. One was interviewing that person. And the other two people were the two voices in the job candidate's head. One advocating arguments and violence, and one advocating play, you know, seeing, being decent. And that was a really exciting creative role play. One of the sayings of AVP I want to bring in here is something we say, which is conflict is inevitable. If you live on this planet, you're going to run into conflict. Conflict is inevitable. Violence doesn't have to be. And that's where the alternatives come in.
Thank you. That's so helpful, Valentine. So we're winding down here. I want to make sure I get this right. Jumpin' Jill and Funny Valentine, if you want to know more about AVP here in New York, it's www.avpny.org. You'll get in touch with our friend Shirley, and she will let you know about workshops that might be in your area. If you're not in New York, it always looks like a funny word, AVPUSA. I always want to say like Papusa or something, but no, it's AVPUSA.org. So there will be opportunities to plug into workshops that will be anywhere, all over the country. And then if you want to further know about the world, go into AVP International, and you spell out all of international. And the three of us have worked actually on all of those levels to do this work. And yes, Courtney, I think we're gonna try for a formerly incarcerated person who've been through AVP to work with us, and we'll think about that for next time. We have a little over a minute or so. Jumpin' Jill, any final words here?
Wow. Just that, you know, all the skills that I've learned, I learned in prison.
Thank you. Funny Valentine?
I want to say the central doctrine of AVP, which underlies everything else we do, is that there is good in every person. And your job as a human being is to speak to the good in that person you are with.
That's excellent. That's simply excellent. It reminds me of the word namaste,
yeah,
which is the goodness in me recognizes the goodness in you. And what a lovely way to interact with other human beings. Well, Courtney, it's been a journey. Caring Courtney, it's been a journey today.
Yeah, I mean, it was so interesting. I'm sure that our audience really loved this show because it's something, you know, we're always talking about what can we do to prevent people from being incarcerated, properly respecting incarcerated people, creating a glide path for a more fulfilling life for people who've been disadvantaged and have been incarcerated. So you all are really doing something about it. You're not just sitting around pontificating, and I just think that's so important.
Well, thank you, Caring Courtney. Thank you, Jumping Jill. Thank you, Funny Valentine. I'm Jazzy John, also known as John Scardina. And stay tuned. Do you know we're going to, you'll see on the calendar, Alternatives to Violence Project Take 3 radio show. I'm on once a month, once every other month. Oh, my goodness. But we'll get this together and get back to all of you. So thank you.
Yes, and stay tuned for Rockin' Irations here on WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 and 107.3 around campus, and streaming live on the web at WUSB.FM.
Opt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time, as in spaghetti sandwiches for dinner. They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Sitting here beneath the stars with you, looking up into the brilliant night sky, feeling vastness all around me as I think of the smallness of my life and larger scheme. I know when I'm with you, I feel the power to be whole and give back to life what is real. This day, this time, this place, this love is all I need to dance my life with you. Einstein said the universe is relative. Now I know that this is true. Time runs fast and slow with beatings of my heart. Space grows large when I'm with you.
I know when I'm with you, I feel the
like the music of the spheres, planets, moons, and stars all spin in harmony.